pause there. One of the things, Michelle, we've talked about, of course, is that you're, when you feel responsible for something you have very little control over, stress goes through the roof, enjoyment declines. It's just an awful position to be in. So I'm always telling people, you've got to calibrate, either match what you are truly responsible for what you truly have control over, or if it's not possible to do, you got to find another context. And sometimes that sense of responsibility is your own internal sense of responsibility that you can discharge and release. And sometimes it's legitimately that made you accountable for something that you cannot do without these other people acting in a different way. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I think you want to check in with yourself on. So I'll pause there.
No, those thoughts have been going through my head. You know, the thing is, as far as like the work environment, the still learning to rise above, so to speak. Like it's not just here in general. I mean, because the thing is you run into these situations everywhere you go, everywhere.
I'd like to suggest that you may not have to run into those situations everywhere you go. I think that's a story that you've got that I want to invite you to reconsider, mm-hmm. which is there are environments out there that are really wonderful to work in.
And I would love to find that place.
Yeah. And the great thing about you, Michelle, is, you know, if you were coming to these calls and not doing the work and kept pointing at everybody else, I'd say, yeah, you're right. Everywhere you're going to go, you're going to find exactly this because it's you who's bringing it. Right. Mm-hmm. But I don't believe that anymore. I think there were things you were doing early on that were co-creating great. That. I don't think you're there anymore. And so I want you to feel hope that where you go next, you're going to bring a new version of Michelle that brings new tools, new resources to establish really good relationships and conversations. And it's possible that early in your tenure there were some missteps that mm-hmm. have led to making it really difficult for you to recover your credibility there. And that's why I'm saying it's okay. You know, I mean, the thing to remember is the first 15 seconds of any conversation will often determine its outcome. 15 seconds, you know, like 6 to 8 words can determine whether the conversation's outcome is going to be in your favor or out of your favor. The same is true with when you're starting a new role. 3 months can determine 5 years of someone's credibility, how they're experienced, how they're viewed. And so I wasn't there, so I don't know what happened in those times, but for sure you have superiors who are not managing well. We know that for a fact. They're not aligned. They're at odds. They're giving you counter directions. That's an untenable thing to start with. And it's not surprising that they have propagated effectively a toxic culture. They're not able to create a good culture until they do good things. So that's why I'm telling you, I told you, look, stick it out, not because I had hope that it was going to change. I thought maybe it will. Maybe there's an outside chance. But I was telling you to stick it out because you had so much going on personally. I mm-hmm. feel like you, unless you tell me otherwise, you've made it through a lot of that. And I think it feels like it's time for you to start looking.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been teetering with that too. And also saying, making sure I'm not being reactive. Yeah. At the same time, I mean, this is giving me lots of personal growth.
Yeah, which is awesome. And you should thank them for it because you have been growing and you have had to learn to rein in some of your power and your intensity. You've had to learn to start those first 15 seconds of a conversation in a different way. You've had to stop sort of looking at the world as if everybody's wrong and you've got it all figured out. Like you've done really well. That's hard work you're doing. And so you're not being reactive. Like I've been walking with you for at least 6 months, right? You're not reacting. You're doing the work. You're asking the hard questions. You're showing up on these calls. Every time I've talked to you, you've been nothing but receptive. And so, you know, first of all, congratulations. You're doing awesome. And second of all, I want to hereby free you because I'm partly responsible for tethering you. You know, I've told you. No, stick it out. So,
but it was, like you said, it was for a really good, I mean, it was the reasons were fine. I mean, there are other things, but no reason, not as big as moving and that can't be handled in a transition. And I have been, again, like I said, teetering with the idea, just also.
Yes. But Peter, just start having conversations. There's no commitment. You don't have to take another job. And when you go to those new conversations, start from a really positive place. You don't even have to talk about how it was a toxic environment. You can say, yeah, there's just some organizational design stuff that's not a fit for where I can add the most value. We're on great terms. There's no problems, but I'd like to find a fit for me where I can add the most value. And so I would just want to explore with you. Tell me about you, who you guys are, what you want, what you're after. I'd love to add value. How could I do that? You know, that's the kind of thing that I'm excited for you to start having new conversations. So off you go. You don't have to take a new job, but for sure have the conversations and then bring your learnings to this group. And we're going to work with you on it to make sure that, you know, you're making good choices and all that fun.
I mean, I kind of, you know, like in a conversation I've had with one of the owners, I said, look, if I'm expected to be perfect, it's not going to happen. And I said, and if that's the expectation, then you can have my resignation today. I mean, I'm like, no. And I'm not trying to be ugly, but it's just every time I turn around.
So I would say that
I would something say, else. No, it's okay. So, just
no, this is good. I want you to hear that. So the way that you just reported that to me shows me that you're redlining again emotionally. Mm-hmm. And that just means you're kind of at your wit's end. And I'd want that's why I want you to start looking, because it's going to de-escalate that. Because obviously no one is saying you need to be perfect, but you're feeling really henpecked. You're feeling really discouraged. And I can feel that. And I've been feeling that for a long time. And that's part of the reason I'm like, I want you to be free from that.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see where you can see that. It was in a conversation. Because again, it was, I told a group of, I told the team that reports directly to me, you know, hey guys, if there's something going on, you know, I really want you to come to me first. And it's not that, so that I can, whether it's being the no or whatever, it got back to my boss. This is how this works here. Get back to my boss that Michelle told her team that she can't talk to anybody else.
Michelle told her team she can't,
they can't talk to anybody else. Okay. They only can come to me. Okay. And that's not what the conversation was. The conversation was, hey guys, I need you to keep me in the loop. If you have questions about anything regarding payroll or anything else, you should come to me. I am the direct manager of the payroll team. So you should be bringing things to me. I just want to be in the ball. And it became this whole other conversation that got back to the bosses, because one of my team members, and I don't know who, said, don't tell me, don't, Michelle said, we can't talk to anybody else. So don't let her know that I talked to you.
Okay.
So my boss said to me, Michelle, why would you say that? And I said, that wasn't the conversation. And then like other things came about and I was like, you know, that's when I was like, if there's an expectation to be perfect and I cannot be responsible for everybody's feelings or interpretations or whatever, they're an adult, they need to come and talk to me should they have a question on what the direction was given. I don't know what to tell you. So yeah, that was pretty much just to give you a whole picture.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And that is helpful. So a couple things I would say is, one is, I think I would feel really defensive in that situation also. So the fact that you were feeling kind of, as I said, I think it's henpecked. It's like
a constant.
And you're just like, I'm so tired of this, because you put forth so much effort and you're not being seen and you're not being appreciated. And that puts you in a defensive posture. And once you're in that defensive posture, your reactions will co-create the very thing that you've been feeling. Because now you get branded as, good luck giving her feedback. She's just going to defend herself. And once that happens, and now you have what you're experiencing potentially in your team, which is you now have lots of noise and very little signal. and it's not clear why, right? It could be that you had one conversation with that team member of yours and your tone of voice was a certain way and they got yelled at that day by their spouse and now they're mad at you, right? And so they're going to go around going, well, Michelle's this unreasonable monster who's all she wants to do is control this and do that. And you feel deeply misunderstood by that. And so first thing I just want to observe is I feel it. I know it well. I don't know any leader in here who doesn't understand what you might be feeling. And it's okay to feel that. And so I, you know, my encouragement is because of that response, which would be considered a defended response, it's gonna make it harder for you to keep building that credibility back. Like those moments when things are going super wrong and you're getting henpecked, in order for you to restore the credibility, it requires a very different kind of response. An example would be something like, oh, this is super helpful feedback. I really appreciate it. I find myself a little bit feeling pretty misunderstood. And I wonder how that happened. And so is it okay with you if I share why, what I've intended? And then maybe we can strategize about how to help that person understand what I meant. Because obviously you're not going to tell me who that person is and I don't need to know, but I want to make sure that person feels restored and put back in place. And I want to learn to be better at this. So my intention and how I'm being received, there's a gap there and I want to close that gap. That is to a boss that says, this is a person I can talk to. Versus if you expect me to be perfect, I'm in the wrong place. As a boss, it's really hard to know how to like, okay, well now I'm feeling misunderstood because I didn't ask you to be perfect.
Right.
I just told you there's like a couple things that aren't working right. And so that's what I'm observing for you is that this is a really charged emotional environment for you. And it has been from the beginning. You really haven't had a chance for to let up. And so I'm interested in getting you some freedom from it and a reset button. Yeah. And I don't know if that reset button is going to happen in this organization.
Understand. I mean, but just to your point, Jane, I have had the, thank you so much for that feedback. I really appreciate it. And I've adjusted. Thank you so much for that feedback. And I've adjusted. Thank you so much. And I've adjusted. And it's just not, like you said, just that it's constant. It's just constant, no matter what step you take. But like just the other day in an email, I didn't even originate the email, the initial email, right? And because, which happens to be his wife, the owner's wife, wasn't included. I get an email saying, hey, Michelle, I'm the one that handles Florida. Please include me on it. I'm like, but I didn't start the email. Literally, I mean, like I didn't start the initial email. I was like, thank you so much for bringing that to my attention. However, I mean, and I was like, I will ensure that you're included moving forward. That was the end of it. But that's an example of just how it's just nonstop. I'm like, I didn't even do it. And it's just, that's the culture right now here and what it is. It's like, you're the individual or that's how it feels. And a lot of time it takes me 2 seconds. I get up, I walk outside, I play with my dogs, put my feet in the grass, do all those things that we've talked about, right? Come back. And sometimes the email goes off into my save box, right? I don't even respond at all. And there's other times that it requires a response. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, thank you so much. I will make sure that happens moving forward.
Yes. And so just to be clear, I'm certain you have done 100 things perfectly well. And what I'm observing is in a system, once they've decided to view you through a lens, even one misstep, you will be branded because they start with a different lens. And that isn't something you have control over after a certain amount of time. And so that's why I'm just, my feedback remains the same, which is it's okay to start looking now. You know, you haven't been seen, you haven't been understood, you haven't been appreciated. that wears on anybody. Nobody should have to endure that. Even if you're, you know, making mistakes along the way and co-creating, it's still untenable long-term. And I think you've been up against it enough. And I think it's time for a fresh start with all the new tools that we have. You will have a much better chance at being really successful in a new environment. And using this group can help you make good choices about where you're going next. We can help you kind of assess, does that sound right? Did you ask the right questions? Do we understand this? You know, that kind of stuff. And then we get to restart with the first 90 days with all the best practices.
Right.
You're doing well. I know this is hard. I feel it.
Thanks.
It may not be thanks. I don't know, but I do think discharging some emotion is going to help you. And we don't have to do it here on this call, but I do think that just if you want to put your screen on black and silence and just release whatever you need to release, because you're carrying a lot and you've sustained a lot of arrows. And again, whether you accidentally instigated an arrow or two isn't what's material. What's material is you're getting arrows. And I think anybody else on this call knows what that's like to feel misunderstood and attacked and in some ways even a little betrayed. You know, you got a team member who betrayed you. So those are real feelings, real things that happened. And you need to recover from some of that. And one part is just releasing the emotion, and the other part is starting to look to give you some relief. How's that sound?
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. Do you need more?
No, I think I'm good right now.
Okay. All right. Well, feel free to feel whatever you need to feel, okay? You have permission. All righty. Clay, you're up next. You sent an email. Why don't you hop on and tell us kind of the high points?
All right. Yeah, so, you know, in my email, I was talking about that I'm involved in a lot of high-level meetings, you know, with a lot of updates, talking about projects.
Clay, there's something wrong with your audio. It's super digitized and kind of hard to understand. Maybe try mute and then unmute. And then if that doesn't work, maybe hop off and then hop back on. But let's just see how you do.
Is this any better?
It's kind of the same. Yeah, I think you got a bad connection. Maybe just hop off and hop back on. We'll take somebody else.
I'll be back.
Yep. Thanks, man. While we're waiting for Clay, I'm going to introduce my wife, Cecilia Hips. She has been doing a lot of stuff in the background of the business, but she's going to take a little more active role in what we'll call customer success. So just making sure all of you have what you need. So I'm going to do just a brief, let her introduce herself briefly.
Hello. Hi, everybody. It's so the echo, right?
Yeah.
So nice to be here with you. I want to tell you that I appreciate every one of you. I've been listening to you, and it's just wonderful to be here with you. Feel free to reach out to me. I want to make sure that you guys have the best experience and get the best from us. And so I'm here to serve and to help you in any way. I'll be sending you my email on the chat, but I'll also be sending you an email. I mean, my address, right? My email address, but I'll also be sending you an email so you can reach out to me. And I'm very happy to be here with you and support you in any way we can. And so great to be here. Nice meeting you all.
And then if you go back on mute, I can come off.
Mm-hmm. So that is Cecilia. She also spent 10 years as a business owner of a spa and salon. And so she knows firsthand the challenges of being a leader and managing people and hiring and firing and all that fun stuff. So she's been sort of actively supporting you guys from the side also. okay, Clay, I think you're, any questions? Anybody else? We'll see. I see that. Thank you from Michelle. You're welcome. Thank you, Michelle. Okay, Clay, fire away.
Is the audio better now?
Much better.
Okay. So in the email I sent to Shane, I was talking about being involved in a lot of high-level meetings where we get updates, talk about projects, do planning, et cetera. Sometimes in those meetings, we kind of get in the weeds and start working on some of the actions or trying to solve some of the problems. So it's kind of a two-part question.
Let me ask this. Are you leading the meetings or are you just in the meetings?
Both.
Okay. And do you find that when you're leading the meetings, it's getting sidetracked, or is it only really when you're a participant in a meeting?
It's both, I would say.
Okay, great. Yeah. And so I didn't mean to cut you off. I want to make sure that I understood that. Okay, please continue.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing about it is, you know, we're talking about, you know, a group of maybe anywhere from 3 to 6 or 8 people. And, you know, we get on one topic and maybe it does involve, you know, 3 or 4 of the people to solve the problem or whatever. So we start trying to hash it out. Well, that's not really what the meeting's about. And frankly, the other participants in the meeting have no real need to know the details. So it's two-part question, kind of how do we avoid doing that, but yet still circle back around and have those conversations with, you know, multiple high-level people that have really busy schedules and whatnot. And I think that's one reason why we get down those rabbit holes is because the opportunity has finally presented itself. And so we try to take advantage of that.
Okay. So I've got, yeah, that's great. So super easy fix. You're experiencing what I call meeting mush. Very, very common in the world of business. There are lots of simple fixes that can get you there. And I'm going to just point you to module 4. There's a video, maybe video 7. I can't remember which video it is, maybe earlier, but it's how to have better meetings. And there's a little workbook and some video. I want you to watch that. In the meantime, I will give you some suggestions before you do that, because that gives you the entire protocol. So the first thing you want to ask yourself is, in general, I believe that most operating businesses need roughly 3 kinds of meetings. Different businesses may need different kinds of meetings. I'm not saying this is exhaustive, but really 3 kinds of meetings. You need a weekly tactical meeting that has a very specific protocol that it runs on. You have a strategy meeting that is monthly. And you then have maybe, if you want, a quarterly, we'll call it offsite, a full day, whatever. And not every level needs all of these meetings. Like that quarterly tends to be for higher level, but you at least want to have a tactical and a monthly strategy. And here's why. When you're in a tactical meeting, you're really focused on those issues that are happening immediately in the next 2 weeks. Those are the issues you're focused on, solving problems that can be solved or need to be addressed within the next 2 weeks. As you have conversations, what will happen is you will say, oh, you know what? It occurs to me that this technology platform we're using isn't really that great. I think we should invest in a different one. And then suddenly everybody's like, well, great. So, well, I think we should try HubSpot. Now, you know, I think Salesforce is better. Well, but Salesforce is too. And now you're actively solving the problem of a technology platform that you're like, this is a months long process. And only 3 people in the room need to be involved in it. And it really shouldn't be solved now. But how do I make sure it gets solved? And the way you do that is you have a container that's already created called a strategy session. That strategy session happens once a month and it is empty on purpose. Then you have tactical meetings. Tactical meetings, during a tactical meeting, you're looking for evidence of, hey, that's a strategic issue. And we need to put it in the strategic parking lot, which will populate the agenda of our strategy meeting. So yeah, we have a technology platform issue. We need to change that. That's a much bigger conversation. That's going to require research before you even have the meeting. That's going to require slightly different stakeholders. That's for the strategy meeting. Not all of you will be invited to that. You know, it's something else. Or you might need to create a separate meeting that isn't a standing strategy meeting. You might just say, hey, we need a task force on fixing our technology platform, and you're going to need to enroll higher ups and across and below and all that fun stuff. But your job as the leader, if you're leading that meeting, and it'll become more clear when you watch the protocol, the meeting protocol, your job in that meeting as a leader, you're looking for two primary things. What are the action items? And what are the strategic parking lot issues? So one of the action items could be, hey, Tom and Sarah, the two of you have a problem you've raised that I think is really important. When can you guys meet to resolve that? Because we're not going to use this meeting to resolve it, but it needs to get resolved. When can you guys meet and report back to us? And they say, I can meet in the next 2 weeks. Great. So in 2 weeks, we're going to have written down here on our action item tracker that you guys will have met. We'll check in with you in 2 weeks. That item is now effectively solved in that meeting. They still have to go do work. They still have to figure things out. But your job as the leader is to be searching for, where's the action item I can capture and document? Where's the strategic parking lot item that I can capture and document? And then it'll be resolved in different ways as you go. So I'll pause there. Does that make sense? Like, that's just one simple example of how to avoid meeting mush.
Yeah. And you know, we have people that are much better at that than I am, I would say.
So that's something, if you're going to be a leader, and you are a leader, as a leader, this is something you'll have to start focusing on. Right. And just knowing that my job as a leader isn't to solve all the problems. My job as the leader is to be searching for and then inviting others into it. Say, hey, look, right now, all of us need to be looking for, what are the key action items? And are there any strategic parking lot issues? And so you're like, well, that's a complex issue that's going to take a month and a half to solve. That's a strategy conversation, or it might be 6 months to solve. And this is a tactical issue that can be solved in the next 2 weeks, but it only needs two people. Let's give them an assigned task. They need to complete it by this date. We will be checking in on you. That's a really important aspect, because if you just say, hey, can you guys figure that out? Nobody pays attention. But if you say, we're going to be checking with you in 2 weeks in this meeting, when you come back, hey, did you guys meet? Yes, we met. Great. Did you get everything you needed? Yep. Great. Done. That's how you create meetings with greater efficiency and higher accountability. Make sense?
Yeah.
You want to push back, dig deeper?
No. And again, I feel like I know some of those strategies, or, you know, I've been told, you know, JD's alluded to it a little bit. I've talked to him a little bit about it. It's just executing and being disciplined enough to not myself go into those rabbit holes.
Got it. Yeah. So it may be your own discipline that you got to play with a little bit. Right. And it's okay if, like, partway into a rabbit hole, a big part of leadership development is just awareness of oneself without judgment. Just becoming aware of, what is my pattern? And so let's say you wander into the rabbit hole and suddenly you're like, I'm halfway down a rabbit hole. How the heck did I get here? You know, I was so curious and interested in the content, I forgot about process. And very often in leadership, understanding and creating and holding the process with integrity is more powerful than actively trying to solve the content. Your job is to create the containers so that the content gets dealt with properly. And it may be that in your weekly tactical meeting, that is exactly where you need to solve it. But what you would do is you could set a time. So I strongly encourage in tactical meetings to have an active timekeeping process where you basically say, on this agenda item, we're spending 5 minutes. Go. You set a timer. The alarm goes off. You're like, that, our time's up. we can either agree that we need more time, or we can agree to move on and capture whatever action items we could capture, because we got six other things to get to. And so your goal is, when you're leading those tactical meetings, is to be to preside over the process and keep it in integrity. And then if you notice you're halfway down a rabbit hole, you just go, oh, hey, I'm halfway down a rabbit hole. I need to look for an action item. I need to see if this is a strategy. It's okay to find it. You know, you're not going to be perfect. So you just, as you go, you'll find yourself like halfway in, and it's easy to catch yourself and go, oh, okay, I need to come back out. And then that'll also make you really good at doing this in meetings where you're not the boss. So the better you get at this, the more you're going to be seen as credible up the chain. Because if you're in a meeting and you've got a boss who's kind of all the way down a rabbit hole, you could just simply say, hey, do you think, are there any action items that we could capture and just report back on at another time? Hey, I wonder if this is a longer range issue that needs a greater stakeholder investment. Could that be a strategic item that we could set aside some time for? Those little questions, when you're not the boss, will make the boss realize that's a smart player. Like, that's someone who's thinking through how to manage and operate a business.
Right. I think a lot of my problems or questions is more about maybe about time management, because I'm also find myself fairly decent about pumping the brakes on other people whenever they get into rabbit hole and say, you know, let's circle back around to it. But it's then, you know, getting back to it with the key people is where I find it difficult, because, you know, everybody's schedule's full all the time. And so, you know, I need this person or that person, or even myself, in another meeting. And, you know, this problem may need to be solved in the next week or two, but, you know, availability is hard to come by. And then it kind of flows into, again, my other question or issue is, whenever I'm in one of my current spots where I'm actively managing a operations department, I can't have my schedule full all the time with meetings or work sessions, because I have to be accessible to the daily operations, at least to some degree. And so that's the other caveat where I have found myself multiple times. And that's kind of how, you know, at least our organization works, you know, maybe most, that, you know, whenever your manager that reports to you leaves, you have to step in and fill those gaps until you can divvy out those duties or backfill that position.
Yeah, you're talking about kind of the natural experience, especially in middle management, where you end up with like, okay, how do I get my job done when I'm spending all my day in meetings? I don't even know where to like spend time to actually do the action items that we agreed we would do. So that's probably a challenge for a larger conversation, maybe a little bit later. But the starting point for you, I believe, is pick the one thing that you have the most amount of control over, and make sure you use the highest impact on that. And I believe that any weekly meeting you run is where you have the most amount of control, that have the greatest impact on creating maximum efficiency and accountability. And so, for example, as part of that meeting, if you identify an action item that you and three other people need to meet at another time, you would try to do it in the meeting. You'd say, when can we do this? Right now, we need to schedule it. Or if we can't schedule it right now, when are we going to schedule it? When are we going to talk to schedule it? You would capture that information right then and there. So a combination of somebody who is assigned as the action item handler, their job is to, they could be an administrative assistant, it could be somebody else, but their job is to capture, document, and report back each week all the action items you said you would do and whether you would achieve them, and you report on it. Did you not, or did you? And then you add to that a timekeeping function that keeps you and everybody accountable. We're all accountable to the time, not just people you think shouldn't be using it. You as the leader are going to go, I've assigned 5 minutes. Now, you have the prerogative as the leader to say, I'm going to give one more minute. But each time you do it, set a timer. Your timer becomes one of your best friends, because it's the one thing you cannot make more of is time. And so what people don't realize is you can have tremendous efficiency in one meeting a week and get a whole lot done and a whole lot figured out if you run it the right way. And I have that training in there so that if you execute on that training, and honestly, I would tell you to use everything in it. Some people piecemeal it, like, I'll try that. I don't really need that. I honestly find that it is so much better when you follow the protocol. So that's my, you know, you have a lot of questions and I think they're all really good ones. And it's hard where you are. I totally feel that. I think that this is the place where you're going to get the lowest hanging fruit for the biggest impact. There are lots of other things we could talk about, but this is the one I want you to focus on.
Okay. Yeah. And I think what definitely idea that I grabbed from there that I like that I don't nearly do enough. And I think I need to immediately start doing is that scheduling those next meetings when they're right, when it's identified that they need to happen, taking that time right then and there and saying, okay, when are we going to meet and do that?
Everybody's got their calendars and you can say, we're going to take 30 seconds to find a time. Look at your calendars. Okay. I can do next Wednesday. I'm open from here to here. Yep. No. Okay. How about here? Yep. No. And then if it's really a mess, you're like, okay, fine. Tomorrow we're going to meet to figure in or whatever.
Right.
So yeah, for sure. Do that.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks.
Anybody else want to weigh in on Clay's questions, concerns, frustrations? I know all of you have a version of this in your own work. So anybody want to give some input?
Just a quick one, Steve. Oh, Shane, sorry. Excuse me. Where I got that. Just the best way to keep that. I have this internal efficiency thing. So keeping the meetings succinct and efficient is, it just, when they get off task and they go that far, it drives me crazy. And I find myself crawling up the wall internally, right? So trying to keep everybody on task without letting them feel like they've been whipped for going off track. That's probably the bigger struggle with certain people, not always.
So, anybody, but yeah. So Tim, the exact same suggestion I have for you, because I've seen this and I remember I've done this with multiple companies, but I'll sit in on a tactical meeting and watch and they'll last 90 minutes and they'll just, or 2 hours, it's 3 hours in some cases, just constantly draining every last thing. And then you've got certain people that never talk and they're rolling their eyes and they're checking their phone. You got other people that are just monopolizing. They just love to hear themselves think and talk and they like to process out loud and figure it all out together at the same time. And you're just like, economy of words, come on, man. And what we did is we simply installed the agreement for keeping time. That was it. It's the only thing we changed. Didn't have to have hard conversations. Didn't have to confront anybody about why they talk too much. None of that. We literally just said, I, as the leader, am setting the agenda. We have 6 agenda items. I think this agenda item is going to take 3 minutes. I think this one's going to take 10 minutes. I think this one's going to take 4 minutes. And I want to spend 8 minutes on this one. That's a total of 40 minutes or whatever, right? I didn't do the math, but that's it, right? We all agree. We write it on a whiteboard. We put it on a sheet and we go, that's what it is. We all see it. We all agree. We're going to start with option one. I'm setting the timer now. iPhone timer. We talk. Timer goes off. That's a 1 minute warning. We have 1 minute to wrap up our thoughts on this issue, or I, as a leader, have a choice if I want to extend it. The most remarkable thing happens when you do that. People that talk too much get really, really efficient. It's fascinating to watch. They're like, well, anyway, but I don't want to take any more time. I just want to, and then they censor themselves. They volunteer. It's wonderful. So I highly recommend that to anybody who's running meetings. You save yourself hours and hours just by just having the non-judging observation of a timer go off that just says, hey, we made an agreement here. This is telling us to stop. Could be me doing all the talking. I still am subordinated to it as well. And then, of course, as a leader, you have the prerogative. You know what? I think we need 2 more minutes. I think we're onto something really good. I want to add 2 more minutes. I'm going to take some time away from the other ones. And now everybody's thinking about time the way they think about money. We need to budget for this thing, how much money are you going to spend on it? We need to do the exact same thing with time, because actually money, you can get more of time, you can't. So let's be super careful about how we express our time. People will be so much more engaged in any meeting you run because they feel their time is being respected. I don't know anybody who likes showing up to meetings. You know, meetings are usually not something anybody looks forward to, but you can actually create meetings that are fun and enjoyable and people actually want to be a part of. And that's just one ingredient. Module 4, I can't remember which video, has a ton of other suggestions to boost engagement and just create a much better meeting protocol. So that helped him?
Yep.
Good. Okay, thanks. Cool. Awesome. And Sarah said the strategy parking lot is helpful. That's great. Thank you for that. Okay. Let's go to, actually, I want to check in with Diego. Diego, when we last talked, are you available, Diego? Yeah. Okay. When we last talked, you were kind of working through a little bit of a tricky HR issue. Walk me through how you doing. Just want to update on that. And then if you have anything else you want to check.
Sure. That actually still going, but it went, I mean, I had a conversation. I know, again, I went back to the direct and honest conversation with the person and offer my support. And she wanted to be part of the group. She can stay. If she not, no, we can give her an out with a soft landing, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she's still thinking. I mean, she talked to my boss and to me. So we're just now figuring out what she wants to do.
Okay. And did the report come back? They were going to do an investigation. Did that
out? Came back. She was fine. She basically put the issues to bed and said she was fine. She was felt satisfied.
Okay.
And obviously she was not happy with the review that I gave her, but
yeah,
but it was truthful and fair. So obviously when you don't perform and you get told that you don't perform, it's never a good thing, right?
No, right. It's hard. But I'm really glad you're being direct. I'm really glad you're not pulling punches because you're afraid of any of the kind of harassment questions that she dealt with from the past. And that's awesome. Yeah. You're serving her really well by doing that, even if she doesn't thank you.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, I was basically let her know that, you know, I'm here. If you need more of my time, I'm committing my time to you. If you need it, let's do it. If you want to do this and you're actually here, I'll commit my time. But if you're not committed and you're not going to really do this, then, you know, there's other opportunities that you can pursue.
Got it. Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Anything else you want to check in on today?
And I'm still working on the building the team, like I'll call it the product university, where we do the onboarding, all that. It's still in the works, moving people around. It's been a really busy 2 weeks, busy month. We're launching a new product. So it's just it's a big deal.
Yeah, I get it. Well, anything I can be helpful with today directly?
Not necessarily. Let me think about it when I'll listen in, and if I get something else that I want to, you know, share. I do have a couple of things going on, but let me think about it, you know, and, like, check with other people, and I'll get back to you.
Awesome. Sounds good. Okay, I want to move to Sarah next. Just a follow-up check-in, Sarah, you know, you've also been up against it, and I just want to see how you're doing. Are you there? You may be.
Sorry, yes, I had to unmute. Yes, I'm here.
No problem.
Things are continuing to move pretty fast-paced for me. Not going to lie about that. We had lots of client activity going on before the changes happened, and so those things are coming to fruition for us and requiring me to be in field with some of the bankers, et cetera. And so I'm really just struggling with meeting the deadlines and issues and with everything that's on my plate, but do the best I can. So that's all I can do right now.
Still redlining?
There are moments for sure. In the banking world, we're in sales, just like everybody else on this call is, right? In this job, you're in sales. We have outward sales to our clients, and then we collect all the information we have from them, and we have an inward sales job to get a deal done. And sometimes that takes more of an effort than it does to get the client to say, yeah, I want to work with you.
Yeah.
So those things take a lot of time. They just take a lot of time. When you're working on a $50 million transaction, it takes a lot of time to dot all the I's and cross all the T's, et cetera.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Anything you want to check in on this week?
No, I'm just listening and picking up nuggets as I go. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. Okay, who would like to go next, if anybody? Otherwise, I'm going to just start calling on people. Checking in, seeing how they're doing. Steven, it's been a while. I feel like it's been a while. Maybe it hasn't. Do you want to just check in? Tell us how you're doing.
Yeah, sure. Well, as we talk in email, life's been kind of crazy the last 6 weeks of spring break with our adopted niece. And then seems like because we adopted her, we have all these other obligations of family therapy and working through some things. And then one of my insurance agents had a motorcycle accident where they were out for 2 weeks right after me coming back from 10-day vacation. So I've been pulling two jobs as well as parenting. And so that's kind of led me to not be as involved or doing the modules as much as I wanted to, as we first talked in, I think, February. So I made it a point this week to come in at 7 every morning to do the modules from now to, you know, at least 2 to 3 modules. And I'm really working on the employee or the relationship model modules. And so to that, I think one of my questions in hearing everyone discuss everything would be, I've had my preconceived ideas of how things should be done. And I'm trying to really rewrite those and re-overlap them with some of the trainings and then the therapy, stuff like that. And one thing is I have somebody in my office that I want them to prove to me they can be a sales manager. And they feel like, well, I've retired from this position where I was a manager for 20 years. That should be sufficient to prove to me. And my point is that was never under me. And that was with another. And I just want to see that leadership come out a little bit of taking responsibility when I'm out of the office or setting the tone, helping out people. And as we've talked before, the other thing that kind of makes that harder for me is he is one of my best friends from growing up and grew up across the street from me. And so there's that dual relationship.
Yeah. Awesome. So one observation that I want to make about dual relationships is, and I think we talked about this on a call somewhat recently, is I think it was Michelle, actually. We were talking about how, you know, it's very common to say, hey, it's not personal, it's business. I actually think that it's incredibly personal. And business is personal, and personal is business. And you can't not have both. Both are going to coexist. And so, for example, if you treat me badly in business, you can't expect for me to have a good personal relationship with you. If you betray me, leave me hanging, lie to me, whatever, it's going to affect our personal relationship. And so just naming that out loud and saying, hey, we have a very important personal relationship, and now we have a business relationship. And what that means is what happens over here impacts over here. Both ways. What I say and do to you in business will impact this. What you do and say to me in business will impact this. So what I want to do is I want to name that. And then I want to have a conversation where we come to some agreements that will protect our personal relationship. One of the agreements is I will always tell you what I'm thinking, how I'm feeling about you, what I'm seeing happening, what's working for me, what's not working for me. And I want you to do the same. And as long as we're both honest, direct, and kind, that can preserve that personal relationship. if we break these over here in business, this isn't going to work. So it may be that over time we realize we really shouldn't be working together. But as long as we've been honest, direct, and kind at every step of the way, as long as we're not avoiding hard conversations, as long as we're, you know, because that's our, honestly the thing where friends feel most betrayed is when a hard conversation gets avoided. Because they're like, I don't want to have that because I'm not going to have drinks with them later and I don't want to have this hanging. So I'm just not going to talk about the fact that I feel really bad about how this is going. And so the best thing you can do is say, hey, that is going to be the kiss of death for our personal relationship if we don't have the freedom to speak well, to speak directly, honestly, and kindly to each other about whatever's going on. So if what I'm doing as a leader isn't working for you, you tell me. I'm not saying I can change it, but I at least need to know it. And I'll tell you, if what you're doing as a team member isn't working for me, you may not be able to change it. You may not want to change it, but at least you'll know the truth. And then we can both shake hands, say we did our best. If we need to part, we part. If we keep going and build something amazing and have fun doing it, great. But we've got to have that agreement up front. And if we break that agreement, we owe each other an apology. So that's the other agreement we're going to have, is we're going to own when we make that mistake, because our personal relationship matters even more to us than our business relationship. So that's how I recommend you deal with power imbalances, and you just name them. You open them up, you talk about them, and you say, hey, this isn't working for me. I'm frustrated. I expect you to give me that right back. If we're going to make this work, that's what I need.
Okay.
I'll pause there for just a minute, let you push back or feedback.
I feel at times I've done that a little bit with him, maybe to not the detail that you just gave, but we've had a conversation from that of how do you want, like my approach was, this is a delicate situation and how do you want me to approach you? And I'm sure everyone on this call can relate to passive aggressiveness of either your boss or the people underneath you. And so I think there are times I feel that passive aggressive come out of him, and yeah. It doesn't help with my background of being, you know, in psychology at times and stuff like that, having a psychology degree and everything like that, of identifying that. And so my feeling is if we've kind of already had a conversation with that about that, how do I then rebring it up or rebrand it?
So I would go for sure, make sure you're watching the hard conversations module in general. Whether it's a friend or not a friend, it's a critical module for you to understand some of the elements. So one of the things that I would say, for example, is make sure you don't psychologize him. Like, don't observe that he's passive aggressive to him. I mean, I understand you might in your mind go, that's passive aggressive. You've got to find other ways to talk about that are behavior-based, not diagnostic, and also not based in character or motive or intention. That is kind of a dangerous path to go. So you want to focus on behavior and its impact on you. So you might say, hey, I want to share with you as part of our agreement, you know, as friends, when we're talking to business, I got to tell you how I'm experiencing you. I'm experiencing you as being indirect, but having really strong feelings about it. And I think we agreed we would be direct. So I want to open this conversation again and tell you that leaves me with more questions than answers. And I'd love for us to be direct. So this is your chance to just speak directly about what you're thinking and feeling. And then I'll be direct with you back too. Can you hear how that's much more functional and it's more based on how I'm feeling and experiencing and less about, I can see through you and I know you're insecure and I know you're got a power issue and I know that you're being passive aggressive. Like, those are kiss of death things to observe to somebody. You may know they're true, but you've got to approach them from a place of, I don't know what's going on in you. I only know what you tell me, and I will trust what you tell me. And if I see a gap between behavior and what you tell me, I'll observe it, because that's what we agreed to. I'll be direct and clear and kind. And then each time he comes back, you're like, okay, remember our agreement. Now you're not being kind. I feel like you're being unkind to me now.
Okay.
And so you're just saying, what are those three things? And I'm not even saying those are the agreements you need to make. I'm just giving you a sample of the agreements I think you could make. You might have another fourth agreement you guys need to make because you mountain bike together and you want to make sure you never talk about work when you're mountain biking or whatever, right? I don't know. Uh-huh. But form some agreements, and then hold each other to the agreements, and be forgiving when the agreement is breached. And if the agreement gets breached enough times, then you get to have the other hard conversation, which is, what we're doing isn't working for me. And I feel like I've had enough conversations that I don't know how to make it work. Can you think of a way to make it work? Because it's not working. And it may not even be working for you. So what I'm interested in is, I want something that works for us. Not just something that works for me. Not just something that works for you. Something that works for us. That's what I'm at. We may not be able to get there. And as long as we honor our agreements, if we can't get there, there will always be an us in friendship. If we violate those agreements, there may not be an us in friendship. So that's why it's important to have conversations like that.
And when you talk behaviors, I assume, and I've really tried to do this in 2022, of making evaluations based on things I can measure instead of opinions. Is that what you're talking about, behaviors more?
Yeah, when I talk about behavior, you know, I think speaking is a kind of behavior. You know, word is an action, and my tone of voice is a kind of behavior. So if I'm experiencing you, even though you're saying the right words, but your tone feels caustic or hostile, that's something I can observe. And I would observe it purely from a subjective experience. I'm not coming to you with objective fact. I'm telling you, you may not intend this, but I experience your tone is hostile and caustic. And it's really hard for me to hear you when that's the tone. Could you understand how I might experience you that way?
Yeah.
Right. So that, I'm not saying he is hostile or caustic, but in your case, passive aggressive, right? So he's not going to be, you might even observe, like, passive aggressive often is caustic or hostile. It's just a friendly version of it, right? Can be. And so you might say, instead of saying you're being passive aggressive, you would say, I experience you as indirect, but somehow a little bit caustic. I feel like there's something that you're not saying. And as part of our agreement, I think we need to be direct with each other. And I feel like you're being a little bit indirect with me. Can you hear how that's not me diagnosing him? It's just me observing how I experience him. And I'm focused less on, now it's really normal, just so you know, everybody on this call know this. When somebody speaks to you and you just know in your heart of hearts, you're like, you're insecure, you're arrogant, you're, you know, you know all the character flaws. Your job is to translate those immediately into behaviors. It's like, so what is the behavior that makes you think they're arrogant? What is the thing that makes you think they're insecure? Focus on the behavior. Don't talk about their insecurity. Don't talk about their arrogance. Don't talk about their manipulation. Just make really practical observations about behaviors and words and their effect on you. And hold them to that same standard, which is, I told you I'd be direct with you, and I need you to be direct with me. How does that, help?
Yeah, that does help. That breaks it down of putting it into a more workable conversation and probably a more pleasant conversation to have instead of, you know, both of us being frustrated with each other. Because I'm sure, you know, he's probably frustrated with me at times. You know, I'm sure that.
Undoubtedly. He's also probably got some insecurity and frustration that you're his boss.
Yeah.
It's normal when you have peers that feel like they're together and the boss has power to decide their livelihood. That's a huge power imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to impact the personal relationship. It just will. It does. And so that's why it's so critical that you talk about, hey, this personal relationship matters more to me than the business relationship. But if we don't handle this well, this gets terribly affected. So instead of saying it's delicate, we show up from a place of strength. Delicate means, I don't know if I should, I better be careful. No, from a place of strength. It's not delicate. It's only delicate if we tiptoe. That's when we destroy it. If we're not being forthright about what's really going on, which is, I'm paying you money, I'm not getting results in performance. This, independent of our personal relationship, this is what I'm experiencing of you. You're free to talk to me directly about how you're experiencing me too. In fact, it is essential that you do for us to preserve this over here. The reason I'm telling you this the way I am is because I care so much about this.
Well, and that's, I think, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, I was just going to say again, that's why it's so critical to link the two in very explicit ways and make sure you both understand that they are going to affect each other. And so we got to work really hard to have really good agreements so that we don't destroy this thing that we both value even more than our business.
Okay. You know, and that's the frustrating part on my end is he is my top producer. You know, it's the other little behaviors that underlying some of his things. And so that's why, you know, he's really good at doing his job, but there's these little things.
What's an example of a little thing that is really irritating you and you're finding yourself frustrated by?
The phone use of being on the phone.
Tell me about it.
Well, like, you know, just being on his phone, and sometimes there'll be two or three times I walk out of my office. I have windows in all my offices so I can see and observe and things like that. It is just him being on his phone excessively, right? But he has 35 apps for the month, right? At 25,000 premium. So, you know, there's times where I've let things go because of, you know, at one point he was my only employee that I wasn't going to be getting rid of at the time.
Yeah.
So he's worked for me about 18 months. And so
why does the phone bother you? What is it about him being on the phone that's bothering you?
It's just that I feel like it's excessive. Like, I don't care if he's on it per se, but it seems like every time I get up, he's on it, right?
And why does that bother you?
I don't think it's sending the right message to the people underneath him, you know, of like the phones are ringing and he might be on his phone and two other people are busy. The rule in the office is if I'm like in this meeting and I'm not available, which I have on my calendar, hey, pick up the phone. And he might be on his phone texting or doing social media. You know, it just seems excessive, but I don't know that either. I'm assuming, right?
Yeah. So I would say, Sarah asked the same question. So you don't know whether he's on the phone with business or just on the phone screwing around on social media, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the first thing I would say is instead of becoming kind of a surveillance expert, really focus on outcomes. Like, he's closing business, performing great, awesome. And then you have another gap, which is, and I'm going to let others weigh in on this, by the way. I don't have a corner in the market on this exactly, but I do believe that the other thing you would focus on is the impact on others in the office. For example, you would say, hey, you being on the phone, we can actually hear you, you know, and so it's distracting and difficult. That's one example. That's not what you're saying, but that would be an example. The other example is you just say, hey, I've been noticing periodically that the phone keeps ringing off the hook when I've stated I'm not available, and I know they have, so it's kind of on you. Are you feeling like you don't have the bandwidth? Because maybe he is working deals and making calls, so he doesn't have time to get fine. Then it's a bandwidth question. But you start with the best assumption about the person. And you just say, hey, I'm noticing that there's gaps and things falling through. And just wondering, or do we have a bandwidth problem? That's going to be better. You're going to get a better reception than like you're setting a bad example.
Okay.
And so the really important thing is I think you want to look at the question. It's okay for you to have that belief and that opinion that it's setting a bad example. It's okay for you to even have that conversation with them if you want. I'm just giving you a safer one to start with. And then if it still doesn't really change and you're still having things fall through, then you just bring everybody together and say, hey, we've got a problem. This is the issue that we have. It needs to get solved. How are we going to solve it?
Okay, and then there are problems with other people. Like on Thursdays, I'm off. It's my day. We do 4-day work weeks here. And so they have, some of the other people in my office have mentioned that, you know, when I'm not in, it goes to a different level, or even of iPad out,
with a game on or something. And so that's kind of why I guess maybe it does bother me a little bit more of kind of going down a little bit more of, I know things are probably not happening the way they should when I'm not here.
Got it. So I think the thing that will make that difficult, and again, I think in that instance, unless you have strict agreements, like if there's some sort of, and there may be, a strict employee agreement that basically says you can't play games while you're in the office, or if there's any agreements you've already made that are violating those agreements, obviously you can bring that up and say, this was our agreement. Can you please honor it? There's a reason we have that agreement. Fine. There are other businesses that basically run very well by saying, all you need to do is produce that. How you get there, as long as you're treating everybody with respect and you achieve that, you can do what you want. You can be on social media half the day if you want. I want to achieve this goal. And then you can be like, hey, seems like you're just crushing it. And you're, maybe I'm reading you wrong, but it feels like you're exerting about 70% of your capacity. It's totally fine with me. Do you want to take this to the next level? What if we move the goalposts? Because I feel like you're knocking it out of the park. I wonder what would happen if you put your full weight behind it. Is that something you're interested in? Because he may be like, no, the reason I work for you is that I don't want to be an entrepreneur working all these hours. And I'm really happy doing what I'm doing. And I'm really happy with the money making. And I hope you're happy with the money you're making. And you can say, I am. Or you can say, no, this is my goal. This is where I need to get to. Do you want to join me? Mm-hmm. And if he's like, not really, then you're like, okay, cool. Then I need to find someone who wants to join me. So I think those are the kinds of trade-offs that I observe in what you're describing, which is what kind of an organization and a business do you want to run? And sometimes increasingly in the world, the best thing you can do for team members is to give greater freedom as long as they're achieving the set goals. And if they're achieving those set goals by working half the time, then you can start to move the goals. And that's how you start to moderate that, just to be like, hey, I think we've been doing amazing. I think we're doing awesome. I'd like to push our goals higher now. And I think, whoa, we can't do that. We're all slammed. We don't have time for that. You can be like, wow, I didn't realize that. It seemed like you had a lot of time on your hands. I didn't realize that. Tell me more about how you're spending your time. What's got your time bound up, and we'll solve that problem. So I'll just pause there again.
I think everything you said is relative and some good advice there. I think I want to be more of the supervisor, leader, mentor to my people, that the latter part of, you know, have them have the freedom, because there's only so many things you can fight in a day as a supervisor. And if you're minutely picking these little battles that are subsequently aren't worth your time, like the phones and stuff like that, because there's something that we have to deal with in this day and age, I feel like I'd rather do that. I think my old self or my supervisory experience from, you know, the past 20 years fights with me inside about that. Like, no, it has to be done boom, boom, boom this way. And that's kind of one of the things that I'm trying to overcome, of not being so set in my ways.
Yeah, I think that would be an invitation for you. Sarah, thanks for being here. Appreciate it. Good luck to you. I think that would be my challenge for you, is just to explore what would it be like to focus more on, am I getting the outcomes I'm after, and less on, are they doing it the exact way that I would do it or want them to do it? And what I think you'll find is that the more people feel freedom to choose, the more they start making better choices. Not always, but often. And so, you know, just stay focused on, is there some other outcome that you're wanting to achieve that this is hurting? You know, so there's one is a business outcome, and maybe he's knocking it out of the park in the business outcome, but maybe you have a culture outcome that you're after. You're like, hey, I want to have a culture that feels like X, Y, Z. That might have an impact. But again, I think you want to ask yourself, what culture do you want? Do you want a culture of an entrepreneurial spirit? Because if you want entrepreneurial spirit, then you have to give freedom. You know, that's the thing that like corporations don't understand. They're like, what, where's the entrepreneurial spirit? And you're like, you treat them like drones. You give them like these things they have to go. If they wanted to be entrepreneurs, they would leave and go start their own business and have the risk and the freedom that comes with being an entrepreneur. So if you want that spirit in the culture, then guess what? You're going to have to give up a lot of like controls, and you're going to focus more on results. You're going to give them greater upside, and you're also make them take greater risk. You know, that's how you create entrepreneurial spirit. But if you're like, I don't need entrepreneurial spirit, I'm an entrepreneur. I need people that will do what I need them to do when I tell them to do it, the way I tell them to do it. That's different culture. You're going to attract different kinds of people, and you're going to have a different kind of business. They're both valid, but you get to decide first, what is it you most want? Do you want to be actively managing people, or would you rather have outcomes that are working and you're giving them more freedoms? You have choices.
Okay. Thank you.
Maybe just reflect on that a bit and see. Anybody else want to weigh in on Stephen's issue?
Yeah, this is Megan Odell. I just, when you just talking about the person, whoever told on him with the iPad and all that, you know, I think what I've seen is making sure you're standard across the board. So is there anybody else? Like, don't just address him if other people are doing it, right? I think you know that, but I think targeting him, there might be some other things at play there, just making sure everybody's getting the same message.
Good. Others?
Yeah, thank you.
Let me see. This is Diego. I would say that, you know, being an entrepreneur myself, I've done it, you know, a few times, and I think would you doing his job at some point ever in your tenure, or you always managing people? Because one thing that I've found is like when I transition from over a individual contributor later to a manager, is like it's hard for you. You know, it was hard for me to like, I wanted to control every aspect of what everybody was doing under me, right? And then as I grew and I figured out we grew, I couldn't control it. I couldn't scale, because then what happens is if you are very prescriptive, everybody's going to come to you for a decision. So you're going to become the decision bottleneck for everything you do. And I think getting used to, I really had to evolve when I had a virtual company and everybody was in every part of the world and I couldn't control what they did. I didn't know what they were doing as long as the outcomes were done. So what I did is, I mean, going back to what Shane said in a weekly tactical meeting with the actual staff, I had specific to-dos, specific things that needed to be accomplished, and we were accountable every week. So maybe I think managing to outcomes, it's a much better path. I think it empowers your people to become their own, and then they might not do it the same way you do it, but if they get it done at the end of the day, I think you need to live with it, because I think that's the only way you're going to be able to scale your business and have more of those people working for you. Because they're gonna follow you as a leader, and not like if you're so like prescriptive and micromanaging, that only give you a very small type of people that are okay with it. You will never be able to grow your successor. It just won't happen because they're always used for you to make all the decisions.
Yeah, I could see that. And I think that at times does happen. Is I think it also happens from a customer base of customers want to talk to me a lot of times because they want to double check of what my people are saying is right. And say, I think there's what I realized the last couple of weeks is I need to be handing off some of these things a little bit more to him or to some of these other people in my office to then give them the experience to be handling them. So then I am not so tied in and being having to work so much and kind of being over consumed with things and overwhelmed.
And look, people are going to make mistakes. You just need to part with that idea. They're going to make mistakes, and then you just need to be supportive. When they make the mistake, you need to go there, be for them and teach them and help them and back them up. And then when people feel that you have their back and they make a mistake and you're there to help them overcome those mistakes and learn from it, I think that when your team will grow, they'll have growth and they'll be a much better team the next time around.
Yeah, thanks, Diego. I think you're right in that regard. Sometimes I do have a trouble with that in regard to mistakes. because some of our mistakes directly affect customers, and then the customer's confidence in the agency altogether. And so I try to do that, where I say, well, we all make mistakes, Mr. Customer, and you know, I'm kind of fixing it. I'm going to go over this so this doesn't happen again. But there's sometimes where it's happening repetitively, and that's where my frustration grows, and sometimes isn't always probably the best. I try to not react right away, immediately, of taking it back. An
accountability issue, maybe, that you need to address the repetitiveness of why the mistake is happening mm-hmm. over and over. I think you need to kind of like figure out, is it something that they don't know how to do? They don't know how to address? Do they need to teach them? Or it may be a performance issue, and they're not, you need to address it with that person directly. And if that person is not performing, because obviously you can absorb a mistake one time, maybe twice, but a third time, I mean, if it's the same issue reoccurring, I think you need to address that employee a little differently. Maybe that employee is not, maybe that type of employee is the one that you are not giving the empowerment. Maybe that person is the micro, you have to micromanage that person for a period of time. But ultimately, you don't want to have a micromanagement culture, because then again, you're not growing, you're not expanding. And ultimately, I think what I found out, the people in your team ultimately going to leave, because I don't think anybody likes to be watched over their shoulder all the time. They want to have the freedom that they're doing the right thing for the customer. I think if you put that culture into your business, that we do what's right for the customer, and you empower your employees to do, I think you're gonna surprise yourself.
Yeah, and I think I have addressed that this week with, I've kind of gone back to, okay, did you get the training in this area? And then if not, or it wasn't adequate, how do we retrain you in this area to then, and then maybe we do a week of follow-ups every day of, okay, what did you do yesterday? And stuff like that. But you're absolutely right in the accountability, a part of that, and then empowering them. So thank you.
Great input, Diego. Thanks. I echo the performance by, you know, managed by outcomes in general. I think it's going to make your life better and easier. And I then in that case, you might need to have a conversation with the person who's feeling like there's an injustice, and just ask them, you know, like, tell me what's going on. People work in different rhythms and need different things, and sometimes people take breaks at work, and I'm okay with that. You know, is it directly impacting you in a negative way? Is there something about what he's doing that's really impacting you negatively? Because I'm really interested in that. What I don't want you to feel or him to feel is that everybody's spying on each other. You know, I want people to feel some autonomy to make their own choices about work rhythms. You know, I think that's another way to think about it, is like, there's work rhythms, and some people work like a bull. They just like, I go to work and I just drive myself all the way through and I forget about lunch. And other people go in spurts and they're like, I need to take a 10-minute break. Some people want to take a nap. Great. You know, sometimes you're going to perform better if you could actually take a nap halfway through the day. I'm not kidding. Like, that's real. Like, that's why Google put nap pods, you know, because they realized certain people perform better and are more productive when they have like spurts and starts and stops. And so I think that's the other thing, is just to kind of ask the question, is there something about the way that he's functioning that is negatively impacting you or the business? You saw him on a game on an iPad. That's not a crime. Like, you could be on a game on an iPad. It's an issue if it's hurting the business. Then I want to really talk about, how's that hurting the business and how can we solve for that?
So another thing that I want to add, sorry, to that is, just because somebody's in front of a computer looking that they're busy doesn't mean they're really busy. Yeah, so it just think about that. They can pretend that they're online doing stuff and they're just not doing anything. So I think the outcome driven management, it's much more effective, because then you can't hide. When you drive to outcomes and the outcomes are not there and then they're clear to everybody, there's no way for you to hide. There's no excuse. I mean, you had the freedom, you had the time, you didn't produce. That's end of the conversation.
Yeah.
Stephen, are you open to some more input? I think some others are willing to wait.
Yeah.
Great. Sure. Actually, I have a question. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
Because I completely understand outcome-based management. I get that principle, but certain jobs are difficult. It takes a lot of management to be able to keep up with what they're accountable for and outcomes in certain positions. Certain positions are really easy. I got numbers, they're metrics, they're easy to measure. I can say you'd hit it, you didn't hit it. And other jobs, other people, it's really tough to do outcome-based, an administrative assistant, for instance.
Yeah. So give me an example. Administrative assistant.
Administrative assistant, their job is, could be variable. They get 1,000 different things thrown at them. Did they perform? Did they not perform? I got no measurement to really get that. And so, maybe you have a hybrid approach. Some people get outcome-based and some people don't. I don't know. I mean, just your thoughts on how that makes it work.
I think you're right. I don't think every role is easily done that way. And the way that you manage outcomes is very different for, I'll call it a creative role, than an operational role. Creative roles need space and time, and operational roles need immediate accountability because there's, only a certain amount of downtime you're allowed or whatever, right? So yes, things need a variety of management styles. Even with an EA, it's really just a function of her job is to make functioning smoother and to take the $10, $15, $20, $30, $40 an hour work off your plate so that you can do the $100, $200, $5,000, $8,000 an hour work. And you need to ask yourself, am I doing between $10 to $50 an hour work? If I am, I'm either not using that EA properly or they're not performing for me. Sure. So you'd first ask, have I even asked her to do these things that I'm doing? Why do I keep doing these things that I know she can do? Or is it, I keep offloading things and I don't ever get it back, or I don't get it back on time, or I don't get it back in, there's full of errors, or I just don't feel safe handing things to this person. That is an outcomes way of managing an EA, is you're just looking at, even if it's subjective, it doesn't have to be objective data and facts. It can be subjective experience that says, I need to feel the relief and the time freedom. That's why I've hired an EA. Or I need her to be managing across various people and collecting all the things that are falling through the cracks. And what I'm noticing is things are falling through the cracks. Sure. So I don't care how many hours you're working. I don't care if you're on Twitter. What I do care about is, did you get these things done in a timely manner, and was it accurate? So
I'll use an example. I mean, there's other roles that fit that.
Yeah. So yeah.
Does the same thing. It's the same thing. The answer is the same, but I think it's really, are you getting what you need out of that person?
And there is, by the way, everything we're talking about now, if you go to module 3 for all of you, there is this thing called the Arise performance model. There are 5 reasons people don't perform. And sometimes there are lots of reasons why. And so you need to get at you need to be able to diagnose what's the reason they're not performing. And so that module I can spend some time on if you guys want. We can talk about it right now. But I just want you to be aware that when you're talking to someone about, hey, I'm not getting the thing that I need from you, there are lots of reasons you may not be getting that thing. And it could be they're not properly resourced, they don't have a concrete skill, they're not motivated, they're going through a divorce, there's all these things, but they're all falling into these 5 categories. So anyway, I'll pause there for just a minute.
No, it's good. Okay. You just kind of hit a button for me because this is one I've struggled with. Also, just switching to that model takes some time and investment because now you need to actually come up with what do I need to get out of that person? And it takes some thought and documentation and, some planning and preparation, which is difficult when you're, fighting all the other things we got to do.
That's great. And you're right. And just so you know, when you're managing people across all the businesses I've consulted and coached with, the thing that I get over and over again is people want clarity. They want consistent standards. Everybody's held to consistent standards, maybe not the same standards, but they're consistent, and they want respect. There are lots of other sub needs that are unique to each person, but I've never met anybody who's a member of a team who's like, I don't need to be clear on where we're aiming. I don't need to be clear on what winning looks like. I don't need to be clear on what matters to my boss. Vague fog is fine with me. I'm very happy. Never heard that. Everybody wants that clarity. And so the first step in that Arise model is Arise, A-R-I-S-E. A is, have I as a leader made them aware of what winning looks like? Have I painted the target with clarity? Have I told them how far the target is? Have I told them which arrow they might want to use? Have I told them which order something needs to happen in? Have I told them what priority, what matters more than another, which is different than sequence? Have I given proper context and clarity and expectation? And have I verified that they share that understanding? Often, that is one of the first places that performance is solved. Just when a leader figures that out, then things can start to change. So just to kind of reflect back to what you said, Tim, you're right. It does begin with, what do I expect? What would winning look like? How would it feel for me? What do I need that to look like? What? So those are the things that I would suggest. Thanks, Megan. Good luck. Have a good day. And just so you know, I think we've, I can't remember if we talked about it on this call or if this was another call I had, but a really good practice when you're trying to make sure you have that A under control is to ask somebody to email you their understanding of what you just talked about and agreed to. And that does two things. One is it takes the work off your plate of having to put in writing what I expect of you. But more than that, what it does is it forces them to generate their understanding in their own words about what you said. And when somebody does that, when they take the time, effort, and energy to generate, this is my understanding of what you would like winning to look, what winning looks like, they are going to be far more attached to it and have a better understanding of it. The other thing you're going to find is about 85 to 90% of the time, some part of what they say isn't what you meant. And so you can then clarify it. You go, oh, actually, thanks for sending that. Let me be clear. I meant this, not that. Or I notice you missed this. Just want to make sure that's in there. Can you confirm? They come back, yes. Now you have written documentation of the agreement that they wrote, not you. So when you go back to them and you say, hey, I noticed you kind of wrote here this. This was our agreement you showed to me. You sent me our agreement. I noticed this part isn't happening. Let's talk about that. Because now they know, yeah, I was accountable. I generated it. They can't say, well, I never heard you say that, or I didn't understand it that way. Nobody can say that because they've already told you, not only did I hear it, I wrote it down and sent it back to you, and I heard it right because you confirmed that I heard it right. So now we're past the A in the Arise performance mode. The other is resource, inexperience, skill, and engagement. Those are the only other four reasons somebody won't perform. They lack the necessary resourcing. They have inexperience. They just haven't been through enough cycles to know how to benchmark things that are happening. They lack a concrete hard skill or soft skill, or they are going through something really hard, or they've lost a connection to their job. They're emotionally not engaged. They just don't want it anymore. And these things aren't relevant. So that's the Arise, A-R-I-S-E. And that's how you diagnose whether somebody performs or not. If you want to go deeper, Module 3 has a workbook along with videos, audios, all that fun stuff. Okay. Oh, we're kind of like nearing the end here. I'm happy to keep going if people need anything. Did anybody else not get a chance to talk? Nicole, I see you're here. Do you want anything you want to weigh in on? Questions you have?
I'm good for this week. Thank you, though. Okay.
You bet. Tim, have a good one. Thanks. Okay. Anybody else have anything else you want to check in on? Thanks, Diego. All righty. Going once. Going twice. Bye, everybody. Thanks again.
Have a great week.
Thanks, you too.